Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. We're in the middle of Genesis chapter 17. God has just made a tremendous promise to Abraham about the birth of a child, totally unexpected. We go to verse 15. And then God said to Abraham, shock of shocks, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, not any longer, but Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, shall be her name. Different meaning. I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall come from her. Well, then Abraham fell on his face, and he was conflicted. He laughed, and he said in his heart, will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abram said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. That was his son by his concubine Hagar. He and Sarah had had that son 13 years before in hopes of establishing an heir. But God said in verse 19, no, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac, which means he laughs. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I will bless him. I will make him fruitful. I will multiply him exceedingly. And he shall become the father of 12 princes. And I will make of him a great nation. But, verse 21, my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this season next year. That is, when he's 100 years old. And when he had finished talking with him, God went up from Abraham. Well, Abraham, as I said at the end of the last program, he's dumbstruck by this great news to the point of being flabbergasted and incredulous. He fell face down. He laughed as he said to himself, are you telling me that a son will be born to a man 100 years old and Sarah will bear a child at the age of 90? Well, Abraham not only felt that was incredulous, it's not that he wouldn't believe God, it's just that he didn't understand what was going on here. Abraham had a sense of humor. I mean, it's almost ridiculous, but faith sometimes entails, I will tell you, a little ridicule. Abraham could imagine the laughing among all his servants when word leaked out that these two very aged people were about to have a baby. Then maybe, too, he foresaw some domestic friction when Ishmael would be displaced as his heir by this promised child. So Abraham exceeded his pay grade a bit. He took it upon himself to advise the Lord that if it was all the same to him, the Lord, just let Ishmael be the recipient of God's favor and the heir of all Abraham had, it would save him a lot of sticky stuff, domestic stuff. He was good with that. But as so often, God had a different plan than Abraham had, and a plan that he had hid from Abraham's and Sarah's eyes. You know, folks, we've always got to look for parallels These things were written for our instruction, for our encouragement, for our admonition. We're told that, as I've pointed out several times, 1 Corinthians 10 and Romans chapter 15. So we've always got to look at the Old Testament through those eyes and wonder what is here for us. This is not just a matter of historical interest. It's a matter to me of very personal interest because Abraham put his robe on the same way you and I do. And his issues were often in principle very much like our issues. And this is the way it is when we walk with God. We propose things, but God disposes them. There are ways that seem very good to us, but the best plan is the one that is good to God. So you and I always need to sit loose on our plans, on our proposals, and let God work things the way He wishes. So in verses 18 through 19, the Lord informs Abraham, yes, we're not going to trash Ishmael, God tells Abraham. Abraham cared very much about his son Ishmael, and as you desire, I will bless Ishmael, but he will not be your heir. Sarah would bear a son, his natural son. They would name him Isaac, which I said means he laughs, is fitting considering how both Abraham and then Sarah, a little later, is going to respond when she gets the news. With Isaac, his natural heir, God will establish his covenant. And that covenant would be an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. In verse 20, God will bless Ishmael also. By blessing him, it meant that one, God would make Ishmael fruitful. Two, it meant that God would greatly increase his numbers. Three, it meant that Ishmael would be blessed and that God would make him the father of 12 rulers. And up ahead in Genesis 25:12 through 16, those descendants are named. And four, God would make Ishmael into a great nation. And Ishmael is the ancestor of the Arab nations. However, in verse 21, it's emphasized that God will establish his covenant with Isaac, the child of promise. Child of promise means the child that God promised to give Abraham and Sarah a miraculous outcome. Sarah would bear Isaac approximately 1 year hence. Well, in verse 22, when God had finished speaking with Abraham, he went up from Abraham, and when he had finished speaking with him, God went up from Abraham. It meant that he vanished from Abraham's sight in this theophany in which Abraham had experienced God's presence. It was a vision of the presence of God in some form and not defined for us. Well, in verse 23, then Abraham took Ishmael his son, and all the servants who were born in his house, and all who were bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's household. And he did as he had been instructed in the earlier part of the chapter. He circumcised the flesh of their foreskin in the very same day, as God had said to him. Obediently, on the very day that God had told him, Abraham wasted no time. You don't dilly-dally about obedience to God. He swung into action. He circumcised Ishmael and every male in his household according to God's stipulation. Divine revelation was followed by divine worship. Abraham falling on his face, and divine worship was followed by prompt obedience. Reminds me of that old hymn, "Trust and Obey. There is no other way," day after day. Well, in verses 24 and 25, we have two timelines. Now, Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. Ishmael, his son, was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. Again, it is emphasized in the very same day Abraham was circumcised and Ishmael, his son, and all the men of his household who were born in the house and bought with money from a foreigner, were circumcised with him. Abraham's strict obedience, his promptitude in the matter of circumcision, which was a seal of his embrace of God's covenant, entailed on Abraham's part a commitment to walk with God by faith, is repeated for emphasis. This is a big thing, is the point. his descendants would be obliged thereafter to adopt the same seal of the covenant in the same spirit of faith as their father Abraham. But we should know, if you don't know, let me be the first to tell you, most of them thereafter adopted the sign of circumcision, but to this day they miss the point of it as including the same faith of Abraham. It's like people getting baptized. Baptism is a sign or seal of the faith that we have in the death of Christ as our offering for sin. But if it's not accompanied by faith, it is hollow and it is futile. This all brings us to chapter 18 of Genesis. Now we read, "The Lord appeared to him, to Abraham, by the oaks of Mamre, while he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. And when Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them," I want you to notice the energy in these verbs, "he ran from the tent door to meet them, and he bowed himself to the earth. And he said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may go on, since you have visited your servant." And they said, "So do, as you have said." So Abram hurried into the tent of Sarah and said, "Quickly, prepare three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make bread cakes." Verse 7, "Abraham also ran to the herd, and he took a tender and choice calf and gave it to his servant, and he hurried to prepare it. And he took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them, and he was standing by them under the tree as they ate." Again, Abraham is the beneficiary of another theophany. A theophany is an appearance of God, not God as he is, but an appearance of God as he chooses to reveal himself. Remember, people in those days did not have the scriptures. They had not yet been committed to writing. That wouldn't happen until Moses came along. So God has different measures and different times and different seasons. And in this season, he chose to appear to this servant. The Lord intends to make sure that we know in the appearance of these three men that the Lord was there in a theophany, appearing as a man. The other two men, put quotes around that, are angelic attendants. And this certainly is one of the references of Hebrews 13, where it says that some have entertained angels unaware. The great trees of Mamre, that's in the vicinity of Hebron, were a grove of formidable trees, I take it a kind of landmark, that gave welcome shade from the desert sun and made a good campsite for a Bedouin or a nomadic family. This goes down in the heat of the day, as the text notes. It's what we might call siesta time, when people would come in from the fields and take a rest break from the intensity of the noonday heat. Well, in verse 2, Abraham, we find, he looks up, three men are standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. That expression, Abraham looked up from possibly napping, and found that out of nowhere, there standing close by, were what appeared to be three men. But as we shall detect, Abraham figures out that these three men are by no means equal, for his address to them initially alternates regularly from the plural to the singular. One obviously stood out above the others. Instantly, by reflex, Abraham shows himself a noble gentleman. He was full of a hospitable spirit toward strangers. Now, that was expected in that part of the world in that day, but Abraham exceeds the norm. His hospitality transcends a sense of duty. That's why I called attention to those verbs. He rises to fulfill his obligation of hospitality with a sense of privilege. His warm reception of these apparent men is not just something he feels he needs to do, But Abram makes it abundantly clear that entertaining their company and making provisions for their need on their journey is a courtesy that he really wants to extend to them. He hasn't gotten it all yet, but he's about to. In this spirit, Abraham displays more than just good cultural manners, just good ancient Near Eastern socialization. What we're seeing is that charitable spirit of being hospitable to strangers that the New Testament encourages as a godly virtue. For example, in Romans 12:13 and 1 Corinthians 3:2 and 5:10 and Titus 1:8 and Hebrews 3:2 and 1 Peter 4:9. It's a big deal in the New Testament. And Abraham, in the Old Testament, way back here, is a paragon or a model of this godly grace. However, let me inject here a side note. Exercising hospitality required some prudence. It's not an absolute. Friends, there are times and circumstances where taking in perfect strangers under one's roof would not be virtuous. It would be folly. I remember hearing a story. I was just a little fellow. I was 5 or 6, I would guess. I don't remember exactly, but I remember my mom talking about it the next day. In our little town in West Virginia where I lived until I was 8 years old, there was a terrible thunderstorm, just kind of an epic thunderstorm that created some flooding, if I recall, just a terrible night. In the middle of the night, and this was a very small town, two men appeared on our porch, banging on our front door. They wanted my mom to let them in. Mom was terrified, and she wisely and predictably refused to open the door. Well, so we should always qualify the rule of Christian hospitality with a little common sense. Be hospitable, but be hospitable but when it is safe. Be hospitable when it is appropriate. It's not appropriate when a woman is home alone and men come knocking on the door. 3, be hospitable when the need clearly exists. You can exclude moochers and derelicts taking advantage of a generous heart, but not when one would be enabling bad habits and conduct. And 4, be hospitable when it is possible, like when food and space is available, not when they're not. Well, in verse 3, Abram asked the privilege to extend to them hospitality. If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, get that, my Lord, one sticks out as the leader. Do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you all wash your feet. That was an Oriental custom, as you may know, when travelers wore sandals and feet were very dusty and tired. And rest under this tree. And let me get you something to eat, so you can be refreshed, and then you can go on your way. Now that you have come to your servant, let me do what is right and appropriate. My Lord, I mentioned that, singular, suggests that Abraham immediately apprehended that one of the men is the leader, or senior partner, as we may put it. This one so addressed will turn out to be an appearance of deity in human form. We note that the atmosphere of the text rings with urgency on Abraham's part. I mentioned that. His hospitality is enthusiastic, it's urgently accommodating, and it's discharged with a servant spirit, not in a condescending attitude. Very well, they answered. Go ahead, do as you say. As Abraham was more than willing to extend his gracious hospitality, the three men were very ready to accept it. You see, when the Lord comes calling, and sometimes as a stranger, so to speak, whenever he knocks at our door, if we welcome him, God is always ready to come in and dine with us, that is, to engage in intimate fellowship with us. You remember in Revelation 3 where Jesus told the Laodicean church that, "Behold, I stand at the door and I knock. If only you will open the door, I will come in and have sweet fellowship with any who would do so." You see, in God's amazing grace, he condescends not only to Abraham, but he condescends to all of us sinful human beings, that we may, if we are willing, have a fellowship with him. God does not impose himself on unwilling hosts. He does make himself available to his faithful creatures. But before he takes up with us, he likes to be welcomed. He will not impose except to correct and to judge. Well, in verses 7 through 8, what we see next is the alacrity, the generosity of Abraham's hospitality. See the verbs. He ran. He selected a choice and tender calf. His servant hurried to prepare it and so forth. And then he stood by under one of those trees in a posture of a servant himself to make sure that every one of his guests was readily supplied. In verse 9, Abraham has once again proved he is worthy of the blessing that is about to be announced, worthy in the sense of being a godly servant. So the three men make inquiry as to the whereabouts of Sarah. It's time for them to bring her up to speed about the promise God made earlier to Abraham about Sarah bearing a child by the name of Isaac. Well, we naturally ask, my goodness, hadn't Abraham told her? Or had she been told and not just believed it? We don't know. The text doesn't say. But probably Abraham hadn't told her. Probably hadn't told her knowing that she would, one, be a tough sell. Two, he didn't want to roil the waters. Just let the Lord work it out, he probably thought. But it was important to God that Sarah herself know that this conception was his work, a miracle work. So the Lord arranges to overcome her natural doubt and bring her faith up to speed. Where's your wife Sarah? They ask him. Well, there in the tent, Abraham said. This question was not for the Lord's information, by the way. It was all intended to grab Sarah's attention, who was fully out of sight. They had not met her at this point. All their business had been conducted outside under the shade trees. Yet these three mysterious figures knew her by name. Now, that's remarkable. That suggests something supernatural was going on here. So her ear was pinned to the tent door, I'm sure, by this time. If she was jolted by them knowing her name before ever meeting or seeing them, she was about to receive another huge jolt that would send her faith in God's promise soaring. They just wanted to make sure Sarah was listening behind the door, so to speak. Wanted to make sure they had her full attention while outside they continued to address Abraham personally. I, not we, notice that, will return to you about this time next year. Here's the breaking news. This is for Sarah's ears. Abraham had already been told. Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Sarah was listening at the entrance of the tent, which was behind him. Asking where Sarah was had accomplished its intended effect. She was eavesdropping on the conversation of the men with Abraham, though she had no clear idea who they were. I clues us into the fact that this personage is the Lord incarnate. Verse 11 explains Sarah's incredulous reaction. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age, and it had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Sarah laughed to herself and said, after I become so old, shall I have the pleasure, my Lord, being old also? And the Lord said in verse 13, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. But the Lord said, oh, no, you did certainly laugh. Now that she grasps who's speaking to her, but still thinking, like we human beings are so prone to think, that God's just an upgraded version of ourselves, she thinks she can lie to God. But that's not working. Well, folks, our time has expired. Tune in the next time so we can continue this narrative in Genesis chapter 18. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.